Hello, and welcome to episode 450 of The Cult of Tea and Dice. Now, just so you know, we're recording this out of order, because we can actually have some of the people in the same room together. I know, right? So, if we sound a bit weird, that's because half of us are in electronic space, and half of us are in real space. So obviously we've decided to play an absolutely batshit crazy game, because we can. We will be playing The Extraordinary Adventures of Baron Munchausen, a game of telling tales and playing roles by Baron Munchausen. And probably something. Yes, by Baron Munchausen. Excellent. So, I'm Mordrigan. I will be playing King Tremulidides, a sexy tree. Hardwick.
Oh, hello, I'm Hardwick, and I will be playing, I have not quite decided yet, but it might be a dwarf with an axe.
Okay.
Called Hardwick.
Okay. Archive.
I'm Archive, and I'll be playing Sadie Terrence Smythe.
Who was?
Mostly in a coma.
Yeah, fair enough. Now we'll go to Blooded.
I am Blooded, and I will be playing Sir Kazarian Weatherby, only the second Beastman to ever be knighted by Her Majesty Queen Victoria, and Master Hunter, and all-round wonderful person.
Mm-hmm.
Fox, in a fifth helmet.
Fox. And then we'll go to Bubbles.
Hi, I'm Bubbles. I may take a similar route to Hardwick. I'm probably going to play a little pixie called Bubbles, because I can.
Of course you can. And finally, Loka.
Hi, I'm Loka Centaurus, and today I will be not quite reprising the role of Ancestral Creek 2-meter white beast man Gurkha.
Who also knows Sir Kazarian Weatherby.
Very well.
He does, because he's his manservant. And mostly chaperone.
Yes.
And occasionally saves him from Martian tripods, if I remember correctly.
That will probably come up in a story.
Yes.
So, as will the power slides in a something like 10-ton nuclear-powered steam thing.
Yes.
That we stole from Fu Manchu and Moriarty.
You're giving the cow away with the milk. You might want to stop.
Sorry.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we actually have a tea to review. Because we're actually in person, it's worth me opening one of these big things of tea and then us drinking the big thing of tea, because it's very difficult for me to make a cup of tea and then squirt it through the internet. Strangely enough, it doesn't work.
And
I stress again, we aren't actually drinking alcohol. We're just in person again. We're all a little bit heady. So the three of us I've got Vanilla Vice, which is a... Oh, fuck, I did the thing in. It is one of the wonderful teas given to us by Wayward Masquerade from that wonderful place in New Zealand. I'm going
to
go...
Do you want me to run and grab it?
Yeah, go. It should be in the kitchen on the side. This is the kind of stuff you don't get unless we're all in person. Oh, I bet you're so glad. Anyway, Well, she's finding out what the tea is. It's a vanilla-y black tea. We've made it without milk. I've put sugar in mine because fuck it. I need the sugar to stay awake. Thank you kindly. So it is Vanilla Vice by Tea Leaf Tea. That's tea leaf with a T on the end, .co.nz. NZ? Anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes. It's a flavoured black tea. Naturally sweet vanilla makes this black tea classic irresistible. E-heater cup or teapot. No, preheat. Oh, I see. Basically, whack it in a teapot, whack some hot water on it, leave it between 3 and 5 minutes. I think we left it the upper end of that. Mm-hmm. And then put it in a cup. Add your appropriate amount of sugar. Give it a drink.
I quite like it.
It's quite nicely balanced.
I like black teas with vanilla in. I find them pleasant, especially with a fuck ton of sugar in, which I've put in today. It's not too black tea heavy, and it's not too vanilla heavy, because vanilla can, if it's in the wrong capacity, get a bit cloying for me. But no, this is really, really pleasant.
Yeah, it's a really nice tea. I mean, I didn't put any sugar in mine because I am apparently, according to Mordragon, a spoonless freak.
A spoonless freak. That is exactly what I said.
But, you know, it doesn't need it. I've got it with no sugar, no milk, and actually the vanilla makes it sweet enough you don't need either, in my opinion.
And Hardwick?
Yeah, I think it's nice black. If it was with milk, I'm
It tastes
not
a bit
sure.
weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a milk and tea person anyway, but
no,
yeah.
I think it would be that the flavour would be lost.
Yeah. It'd get a bit cardboardy, probably.
I don't know what that means either.
My brain spat that phrase out, and then I went,
what?
Are you sure about that, brain? Are you sure about that?
Anyway, tea is good. Milk, probably no.
Yes. So, let me explain to you all at home how the adventures of Baron Munchausen begins, how it works. We will all be telling stories, and we all have these 5 coins. If we wish to interrupt somebody else's story and add something to their story, which they will then have to work in, otherwise they will be penalised by being forced to stop their story because it's obviously a lie. Oh, incidentally, challenging people to duels is a thing that we can do in this game, supposedly. Let's not worry about that, hey? Because 3 of us are actually in person, and there is enough weaponry in this house that we could fight a duel, but we're not going to. But only sword. I mean, we've got elastic band catapults somewhere, right? Anyway, so somebody will start telling a story, which is probably going to be laden with mistruths. I won't say outright lies, but they may have considerably mixed up what they were thinking about. And somebody might say, but surely, and then add something to their story, which they will then have to work in if they accept the coin that is proffered to them. If they decline the coin by saying, I decline your coin, some of us are electronic and we can't actually do the coin passing motion, then they lose one of their coins to decline the coin. Once everybody's told a story, everybody has to then take their coins and give them to the person who they thought told the best story. So if you end up with shitloads of coins in your hand, basically it's not going to do you any good because you've got to give it to somebody else. Now, we must decide whether we are playing Classic or Queensbury rules. Are we going to allow the splitting of your pot?
I'm inclined to say no, because that makes maths more complicated and we're all quite tired.
I am also going to vote no.
Excellent. In which case, with 2 people who actually gives a shit and everybody else not caring, we'll go with Classic. Now, I need to ask what your various titles are. What is your title? I believe it's Chief Engineer.
First Mate.
Oh, no, you're right. You were First Mate.
Yep.
Okay, so what is your title?
I mean, this could be at any point, really. It doesn't have to be at the same time as we last saw Sadie.
Do you think she became Queen or Empress?
No.
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 Where do you think she stopped on her rise to power, as it were?
I mean, I was thinking she might have made it to Lady.
She might have made it to Lady. Marrying in or stealing?
I mean, we may find out in the tale.
Or marrying in and then bumping off, perhaps. So at that point, we will go to you, Sir Kazarian Weatherby. I assume we are not talking about being a sir, a knight of the realm.
Okay. Indeed.
And Ansar, what is your ranking?
I believe at the time of the adventures, he didn't formally have a rank.
I believe you were a Batman.
A gentleman's gentleman, certainly.
So a gentleman's gentleman. Bubbles, do you wank as high as any in Wome?
We haven't got to the stories yet.
I know.
I'm going to call her Lady. She's going to be a lady.
She's going to be a lady.
Yeah.
Well, I'm King Tremulodides, so I guess I'll be going first. Let's see. I realised I said that and then went, what am I telling a story about? I can't remember. Bear with me, I'm going to drink a cup of tea to give myself a few moments to think. Have I ever told you the story of the strange alien planet I visited after we stole the TARDIS, where everything was made of tongues?
Don't believe you have.
Well, It seems when you steal a TARDIS and you press all the buttony things and pull all the levery things, usually what happens is the TARDIS does whatever the fuck it wants. And it strands you on planets it considers important. Now, the TARDIS that we were riding in was previously owned by somebody who is best described as batshit crazy. And therefore, it decided to take us to a planet where everything was made of tongue. The people, the Tongingians. Yes, I did say the Tongingians. And I'm going to try and remember that I said the Tongingians, because that may have to come up again later. The people known as the Tongingians were, in fact, vaguely humanoid in shape, apart from being made entirely of tongues. So they had one big left tongue for their leg, one big right tongue for their leg, one long thin tongue for their left arm, one long thin tongue for their right arm, a large flabby tongue for their bodies, and then a sort of long whippy tongue with some hair on the top of their heads. But they were completely sightless. They saw only in tongue things. Taste, that's the word I was looking for. I'm very tired. When we landed upon the planet, they immediately ran up to thoroughly lick our TARDIS, which enjoyed it immensely. Unfortunately, being TARDIS adventurers, we decided that we absolutely had to step out of the TARDIS. This was the beginning of our major woes, as we stepped outside and were roundly licked. It was awful. Not least of all, because I am made of wood. It was rather unfortunate that the Tongingians got several splinters from me and immediately considered me their antithesis. They decided that I must be the very epitome of their Antichrist and decided that I would be sacrificed, which was rather unfortunate as their mode of sacrifice was always barbecue, because they are, after all, tongues. And this is the most tasty of sacrifices. Unfortunately, of course, I am made of wood. So they decided that rather than eating me, they would actually use me to smoke a large haunch of, well, I'd like to say beef, but it was tongue, because everything was made of tongues. I might have mentioned that before. So I was taken. Oh,
I just wanted to ask a question.
Yes, go ahead.
In this world where everything is made of tongues, what did they normally use to fuel the barbecue?
Ah, well, they had this thing called a tongue tree, which is basically a tongue that grows out of the ground, but is a bit more barky than most. And they used to scrape it with these specialised scrapers. You could hear their lumberjacks at work. It would go like this. It was a most disgusting sound, but after a goodly 6 hours of scraping, you'd have a fairly large pile of bark, which you could then use to cook your various tongue-based meats.
So, I have a question.
Yes, indeed.
If they have this tree, tongue tree thing...
With bark on, yes.
Which, for them to have discovered, they must have licked it.
Yes, they did indeed lick everything.
Yeah.
Including
therefore,
each other.
Probably having come across bark before, why were they so shocked when licking you that you were tree-like and then having to burn you?
It wasn't that they were shocked by my tree-likeness. They were certainly used to tongues with bark on the outside. What they weren't expecting was tree-like beings that actually get them splinters in their tongues, which, of course, I must stress, is their entire body. So when they gave me a right good licking, as they put it, they found themselves pierced mightily by my spikiness. Unfortunately for them, I was shedding at the time, and therefore there was a lot of splinter to go around.
Sounds so, like you need a good sanding.
Yes, I mean, I hadn't had a chance to go to the sander recently, and... You know how difficult it is to get an appointment at the Sanders. And when you get there, they want to ask you if you've been on your holidays, and you have to turn around and go, well, I've been in the TARDIS, and it's this planet made of tongues, and they licked me, and then we get back to our story.
But wait, I have a quandary there. Is not a TARDIS a machine that travels through both space and time? Could you not simply go back to an appointment time?
I mean, you can do that, but the problem with going back to an appointment that you previously made is you're sat in the seat, so you have to sit on your own lap. And when you do that, you end up with either your buttocks not getting sanded or your groin not getting sanded. And I have to explain to you, it is very important that both of those parts get sanded equally, because nobody wants a spiky bollock. So anyway, they decided that they were going to get me to smoke this huge, enormous tongue, which they cut off some tongue-based beast, which we won't go into because it was quite ugly and a bit slobbery. So they packed me into this smoker and applied fire to me, and I began to smolder. Now, I don't know if you've met me, but I smolder very well. And it took a little... Now, the players here are laughing because they remember what this character was like. I smoldered for approximately 18 to 20 hours, filling my smoker with a most amusing and interesting scent that went into this tongue-based beast and cured it magnificently. Unfortunately, having cured it, it went on a rampage because it was no longer dead. It broke out of the smoker, putting me out, which was nice. I had actually lost all of my spikes because they'd mostly burnt off. And as the tongue-based beast rampaged through the waiting Tungarians, who I remind you is exactly what they were called, and I didn't call them anything else earlier.
I'm pretty sure you called them the Tungethians earlier.
I'm fairly certain that I did not have your coin back. Anyway, these Tungarians, they fled in all sorts of directions, allowing me to rise up out of the smoker, somewhat darkened, but less splintery. They fled from the beast, but they didn't flee very far. As this beast rampaged off up the mountain, they all came back. And when they came back, they immediately licked me again. But this time, because they had burnt off all my splinters, there was no problem. They just thought I was a tree. So I stood there for a little while with them licking me and listening to them exclaim, "Well, I don't know where he's gone. I can't find him. There's a tree here that wasn't here before."
But they don't have trees on this planet. You just said they just have tongues with bark on them. So how do they know what a tree is?
I'm translating, dear lady. I'm explaining it in words that we would all understand. They found something that they believed to be a tongue with bark on. I waved mightily in the wind just to convince them of the fact, and occasionally licked the odd one of them just to prove a point. But in general, they thought I was one of their tongue bark based trees. Now I wasn't giving them splinters. There was no way for them to know otherwise. I waited until they'd all drunk a hilarious amount of, well, tongue-based liqueur, and then they all fell down to sleep, and I snuck away, back into my TARDIS, which I then tried to take off on, but unfortunately they'd licked it into submission, so I had to wait while it recuperated. And that is how I visited a planet made entirely out of... There we go, then. I believe one of the ladies has to go next. Will it be Lady Bubbles or Lady Terrence Smile? Or should we toss a coin? By a coin, I mean my phone, because I don't have any coins in my pocket, etc.
I mean, tossing your phone may not be that much fun.
Would you like smooth or creased?
Phone?
Yeah, my phone case has a crease down one side and is smooth on the other. Smooth or creased?
Oh, right, creased.
It's your go.
It's smooth.
Archive is beginning.
Gosh, that was really quite a story. I'm not entirely sure how to follow it. But I could always tell you about the time I got a train across America.
Oh, God, it's not like the last train you went on, is it?
No, this was quite a different journey, actually. Yeah, I'm sure you've all heard about the tale of my journey on the Orient Express, which I'm sadly was on for far less time than I wanted to be. But some years after that, I travelled further afield. I travelled to America because we'd heard some tale of an artefact that we wanted to look into. I won't go into too much detail here because you never know who is listening and I don't want my Uncle Henry to be upset. But nonetheless, I found myself in America. When I boarded the train, everything seemed relatively normal, which was fine. Much to be expected, really. Everything seemed fairly normal. The previous time, I'd been on a long train journey as well. And so we set off. It was only a few days into the journey when we realised that we weren't making any progress. We were here taking this train across America. We'd been travelling for several days, and yet the scenery outside seemed much the same. And as we sat there, we noticed that as the mountains went by, a few hours later, we'd see the same mountains again. It was like we were stuck in some eternal loop of mountain upon mountain, and we weren't sure how much longer we'd be there for. So, of course, at this stage, we had no choice but to investigate. So, of course, I've got some experience investigating things on trains, so I thought, who better to do this than myself?
And,
yes.
You mentioned earlier, didn't you spend most of your last investigation on a train unconscious? Did you gain much experience that way?
Oh, well, a lot of the time, I fell unconscious some way into the journey, but by that time we had, in fact, gone through several investigations.
Sorry, I just mouthed, fell unconscious and did air quotes around it because I know what actually happened.
I think you'll find by that time I'd participated in several investigations, including rescuing a man from almost certain doom by summoning a dream train to his location.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, you haven't lived until you've created a dream station, dream train. I can tell you that. But having had this previous experience and created a dream station, I thought perhaps I'd be capable of establishing exactly why this train appeared to be in some sort of timeless zone. So, of course, my companions and I made our way up to the front of the train, and well, we thought we might have a quick word with the driver. We thought that was a very good idea right until we saw the driver. And upon seeing the driver, decided actually a quick word may not be the best plan, and perhaps retreating to our seats and considering maybe a better one. The driver was, in fact, not a human at all.
I mean, how awful for you.
This may not come as a shock to you, being a tree, but for us, having never seen anything that wasn't either human or some sort of monstrosity, it was certainly a shock. I mean, I don't want to tell you about the time I saw this hideous dog creature. It was terrifying. But this was 1,000 times worse.
Mm-hmm.
This creature resembled nothing more than an elephant.
I say, I don't know why.
Oh.
Fair enough.
It was attempting to drive the train using its trunk. And I don't know about you, but certainly in my experience, trunks are for the luggage car, not for the steering.
Is there much steering to do on a train? Amazing.
Yes, my point exactly.
I'll let you pay the coin then.
Sure. There isn't much steering to be had, especially on the long straight tracks of the American West.
I mean, that is certainly what you'd think, but it turns out because its trunk was doing the steering, it was repeatedly steering itself back round. There was, in fact, a circular track going around this mountain, and instead of taking the junction to go straight on, it was instead steering round and round in the circle because it refused to go in a straight line. This elephant was certainly very rightward leaning.
Now, I have to ask a question. I have to ask a question at this point. Surely the elephant would realise that it was going round and round the same mountain, because elephants, as we all know, never forget. So it would recognise that it had passed the same location multiple times, surely.
Perhaps you might think that is the case, but this elephant, either it had forgotten, or it just really liked that scenery. We're not entirely certain. Having retreated from the possibility of its baleful stare, we sat amongst ourselves.
Baleful stare of the elephant looks upon you with those large, belashed eyes.
We discussed among ourselves the best thing that we could possibly do. Now, everyone knows there are three key facts about elephants that everyone knows.
Mm-hmm.
Elephants like peanuts.
Yes.
Elephants dream of flying.
Uh-huh.
And elephants are scared of mice.
Indeed.
So, what do you mean, you need to stop making me laugh here?
No, shan't.
So, with this information at our disposal,
mm-hmm.
we came up with a cunning plan. Of course, knowing that elephants are actually very fond of peanuts, it's almost certain that an elephant would have a store of peanuts beside them. What sort of elephant would drive a train without a case of peanuts? In fact, it's entirely possible, thinking about it now, perhaps the peanuts were on its right-hand side, and that's perhaps why it kept leaning in that direction.
My goodness, we've solved the case.
Yes, that's an interesting breakthrough. I may have to discuss this. Well, it makes no difference now, I suppose. The problem is solved. But regardless, we decided that actually, knowing that there is a source of peanuts there, all we needed to do was locate a mouse, and the mouse would also want to go for the peanuts. An elephant finding a mouse inside its case of peanuts would have no choice but to panic. And perhaps, it may flap its ears enough that it would manage to fly. And if it flew out of the carriage, it would no longer be our problem.
Uh-huh.
Why would the mouse be in the peanuts? Aren't they known for liking cheese?
They are also quite fond of peanuts, it turns out.
Denied. So yours goes down by one. And yours goes up by one bubble.
Mm.
But continue.
I mean, it is true. They like cheese as well, but they are also fond of peanuts. But, as you say, cheese is something they're fond of. So, of course, the first place we went to find our mouse was the kitchens, where, unsurprisingly, we managed to find one in the cheese cupboard.
Dun, dun, dun!
This little mouse looked terribly startled to see us, but, of course, we explained our predicaments.
There'll be a brief sponsor break while Archive gets her giggling under control.
We explained our predicament and urged the creature into a little cup, because of course you can't touch it. Mice are quite dirty creatures, and my gloves were rather clean. I did not wish to sully them.
There'll be a brief sponsor break while I go get say giggling under control.
I blame Mordrigan for this.
Yep.
Anyway, now I'm staring the at the other side of the room.
The gigglings will continue until morale improves.
So we persuaded the mouse to get into the cup. And then we took the cup with us right up to the door to the engine room. And we had a moment of just waiting for the right time. Because, of course, we couldn't... If the elephant was startled too soon, there was a point, of course, where the cliff edge was awfully close to the side of the tracks. And if the elephant was startled then, it could have led to inescapable doom.
Inescapable doom.
So we had to wait until the moment where we were actually approaching the point where the track going forward left the circuit around the mountains which we were taking. We timed it well and let the mouse free from the cup. The mouse paused for a moment, sniffed the air, scented the peanuts, and went scurrying into the engine room and found itself in the elephant's peanut barrel. The elephant shrieked, and the whole train rocked. You thought for a moment, this one horrific moment, that perhaps we would all tumble and the train would crash down and we'd all fall to our deaths. Despite the fact we were some way from the cliff edge, it was still a possibility. This is the mountains after all. But we were lucky. And at the last moment, I admit I could not hold myself back. I panicked and I ran forward and wrenched the steering from the elephant's grasp and moved us onto the correct tracks, and we continued our journey.
The end, I assume.
Well, the elephant was... He has to be taken to the back. He was in a lot of shock after that. But yes, I ended up driving a train across America. It was quite an experience, actually. It turns out I'd picked up a little bit about driving trains. I'm not sure from where. Possibly my dreams.
While you were unconscious.
Yes. Anyway, that's the end of the story.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I believe we are now on to you, Lady Bubbles.
God.
Indeed.
Oh, blimey. Did I ever tell you about the time I was persistently courted by a goat?
No, you have not, but do regale us with this because it sounds intriguing.
Well, as you can imagine, being a lady pixie, I spend the majority of my time in nature and hopping from flower to flower and toadstool to toadstool.
Tree to tree, nimbly bimbly. Perhaps.
Indeed, indeed. And I was just one day minding my own business along my favourite row of flowers that I frequent on a regular basis around this rather lovely green meadow which overlooks some lovely hills, and just in the distance you can see some snow-topped mountains. It's all very pretty, really. And on this particular day, there was a goat.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, a goat. Pixies are quite friendly with satyrs, so we every so often have parties with them. So goats are just a a long forgotten cousin. So,
I see. Okay, continue.
The goat at first did not scare me in any way, and I was merely going about my business. When the goat saw me, and this is when it starts to get a little bit prickly.
Prickly, you say? It was a porcupine prickly. Goat of some description.
No, not really. More in a metaphorical sense than a literal sense.
I see. It was not a porcupine goat. No?
No.
Your value goes down by one. Mine goes up by one.
I've got to find the number of my dice now. Yes. So the goat saw me, and it was very cartoonish, really, as his jaw kind of dropped to the floor and his tongue rolled out, and like he had like pulsing hearts popping from his eyeballs. Very disconcerting.
Sorry, could you just repeat that?
Yes, his jaw dropped to the floor, his tongue rolled out, and hearts were pulsating from his eyeballs.
So I wish you could see the actions that Modrigan is doing.
This sounds like quite a serious condition.
Nobody else wants to see that.
I mean, I would have referred him to a doctor. I would have referred him to a doctor. However, my goat is a little rusty.
Oh.
He was a rusty goat, so he was made of some kind of metallic
iron, shortly.
Yes. His hooves.
Iron
he had
goat.
Shoes on his hooves, which were obviously not being taken care of enough.
Fair enough.
So
your rusty yes. goat.
Yes. The rusty goat, quite terribly destroying the meadow in which I very much enjoy gazing upon, trotted up to me and bleated something in goat language. Not entirely sure what.
Goat language, I see.
Yep, because what else would goats speak?
French?
Yeah, I've heard goats can be quite good at French. Only the French won't let them into weddings. I'm not sure why.
Probably the rusty hooves. Mm. So I kind of looked at him for a little bit and just said, excuse me? I feel like this was the moment that the goat realised I didn't understand goat language and reverted to the common tongue. And he said, hey up, girly, fancy a drink? To which I kind of responded, no, not really, and tried to continue on my way. However, as there are many other females here, most males are very bad at taking no for an answer, as I'm sure people are aware. So,
I've heard goats can be very stubborn.
Exactly, exactly. So he continued to follow me and was asking if I was maybe attracted to female pixies rather than male pixies. To which I responded, no, but I'm not really a fan of goats. But apparently that was completely the wrong thing to say as he stormed off. And I thought, ah, fantastic. I can get on with my day of looking at the mountains and jumping from flower to flower and tree to tree.
Or nimbly bimbly like a cat.
Or nimbly bimbly like a cat. And I continued on with my day and thought nothing of it until the next day, where I thought I would just lounge in my home for the day, which is a nice little hut made of grass and straw and flowers, and I was just relaxing when the roof disappeared. And
I mean, from a goat perspective, you did just make it out of food.
Yes, but I have lived in this particular straw slash grass slash flower hut for a considerable length of time, and never had a goat eat it before. So this was a first. So he decided to eat my roof, which I wasn't particularly impressed with, as you can imagine. Imagine if it rained, then I'd get a flood in my kitchen. And I can't be bothered to clean that up, to be perfectly honest with you. Mm-hmm. So he ate my roof, and I got a little peeved. So I square up to this goat and say, what do you think you're playing at? And he responded with, well, if you just went for a drink with me, this wouldn't have happened, would it? I haven't decided what accent this goat had at the time. I think he may have varied.
I'm assuming goat.
Yes, it was a very goatish accent. And I'm not very good at my goat accent impersonation, so you'll have to bear with me. So, for the second time, I am confronted with a goat, which wants to have a drink. But I'm not entirely sure what pub would let him in. So I'm not entirely sure where he's planning on having this drink. As most pubs around my area specifically say, no goat. Probably
what
because...
What sort of area do you live in that specifically has to say no goats? I would assume that the standard no animals allowed would cover it normally.
However, you have... the problem in my area of centaurs and satyrs and other kind of mixed race between animals and humans. So if you say no animals in my area, you offend a rather civilized population who may on occasion want to go into a pub and have a drink.
Okay,
so you have to be very specific with your... signage around here.
I see.
And as I am now realizing, goats are incredibly stubborn. So I can understand why, you know, landlords of the local ale houses may not want them in their premises. So I put this question to the goat as to where he thought would be a suitable place to drink. And you know what he said?
No.
The lake. Who takes a prospective mate or girly thing to a lake for a drink?
Mermaids, mermen, seals, walruses,
goats,
sulkies.
I mean, they generally live in the lake to begin with, so they are not.
Oh, sulkies are only part time. Sulkies are only part time.
Yes, indeed, but they do generally live around the lake area, so I wouldn't personally consider that taking them to the lake.
Fair enough.
Oh, no, I have a question. Just going back slightly.
Okay.
If all the pubs say no goats, why didn't you go in?
Because at this time, this was only the second encounter. So I thought after the first encounter, I had shooed him off sufficiently that I would not need to be bothered by him again. However, I was unfortunately incorrect.
As
I discovered when my roof got eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And he did also produce a fair amount of slobber during this process, so I now had a slobbery floor too.
Nobody likes a slobbery floor.
No, indeed. Don't worry, I sent him my cleaning bill. He offered the lake as a suitable drinking...
establishment, yes.
Establishment, thank you. I decided, no, I did not want to go to the lake. I went there a couple of days ago, and I don't really get on with the merfolk.
Well, they are very weird.
Yes, indeed. So it isn't possibly the best idea for me to spend time near their humble abode. I feel like that's kind of taking the piss a little bit. And I told Mr. Goat that if he were to darken my doorway again, I would set my ogre friend upon him, Og.
Does he come in and peck by any chance? Or is he half a hundredweight?
He's a full-sized ogre. I believe most people know the relative Shrek, so he's a distant relation to Shrek. And quite well known in the area for not enjoying roast goat. Especially spit roasted, I think.
Well, it sounds like you had enough spit.
Yes,
sounds
indeed.
Sounds like you have an evening planned, I was thinking.
So the goat looked fairly aghast at this proposition, knowing that Og likes spit roasted goat, and fled in the other direction. Rather quickly, I might add, flattening some of my friends' houses on his way, come to think of it. I think I sent him the building bill as well, to be fair, on that one.
Did you hear anything back about these bills?
No, not really. But it was worth a try. Same. Yeah, I'm planning on suing him. I know a very good centaur lawyer that I'm planning on enlisting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can hardly be much of a surprise. I've heard in this place where they don't like goats in bars, they also don't like goats in banks. Can't be very well off.
Well, maybe he should think about that before trampling homes and eating roofs.
I mean, possibly, certainly.
You know, it is a fairly, you know, I just feel like it's common courtesy not to run over someone's house.
I mean, I would agree.
You know, just be a little bit careful. Dodge between houses.
So how did you get rid of him?
Ah, I got rid of him by calling Og, and we had a lovely meal of roast goat and potatoes.
I see. Now, I believe the next person in rank would be Sir Kazarian Weatherby.
Indeed it would. So, I, as a knight of the realm, have had many, many adventures in my time. Of course, you all know the tale of the Martian invasion of London.
Mm-hmm.
But there is the question of what came after that. For you see, Mars is not the only orbital body.
Ooh.
I mean...
And thus...
I was aware, but go on.
For you see, Her Majesty decreed that to avoid further surprises, for indeed we had been told that the chances of anything coming from Mars were 1,000,000 to 1.
1,000,000 to 1 is certainly what they said.
It was decided that exploration would be the key, that we must go to space and rightfully claim it for the Empire by planting a flag.
A nice, pretty blue one.
Indeed. And so, to that end, I was honoured when Her Majesty asked me to lead the first expedition to the moon.
The moon.
Indeed. Now, admittedly, I might have preferred Uranus, but the moon is a good close second.
Many people do like to visit.
Space palms in the background.
Yes, many people yes, do like to visit Uranus.
I have been told.
I have a question.
Yes?
Well, you said that these enemies, the aliens came from Mars, but surely they'd have passed the moon on the way. I mean, if there was anyone on the moon, presumably they'd have seen them go by.
Well, yes, but we could not ask the Martians, for we had defeated them thoroughly, both on Earth and by the aid of another group of bold adventurers, almost unequal to my adventurous prowess, on Mars itself. So we could not ask the Martians because, well, they couldn't tell us anything. They were dead. Thus, we would have to discover for ourselves what was going on the moon.
Indeed.
And so I did enter a rocket ship and, with my trusty band of disposable British soldiers, we did set forth into the skies. And with much rattling and turbulence and vomiting, we did arrive upon the moon.
Although not from what I heard, without several attempts to open the window.
Yes, well, we had to be rather firm with them. Luckily, we made it in one piece and donned our extraterrestrial exploration suits, which were basically just repurposed diving suits, but, you know.
Were these diving suits the sort where you have to continuously pump, lest you become... basically pate.
Well, in fact, yes, good sir. But you see, every man was assigned a pumper.
I who see. Would
pump you.
So and each course, man had his own pumper.
Yes, for you see, we basically formed a circle and moved in a wheel-like motion across the surface of the moon.
So you circle
outward.
Pumped.
Yes, we circle pumped.
Circle pumped. Across the moon.
Yes, we did.
Excellent.
And we explored the moon. We were sad to discover it was not, in fact, made of cheese, for that would have been a wonderful gift to give to Her Majesty, for Her Majesty does love a nice bit of cheese.
An entire planet made of cheese? Yes, I can see why that would be interesting.
Yes, so we were sad, but nevertheless, we continued on undeterred. And so we explored across the oceans of the moon, which were not literal oceans, obviously. There is no water on the moon. It's okay, we brought our own. We had one hand for the water, the other for pumping.
Yes. So with one hand you pump, and the other hand you drink the water.
And do everything else you need to do. And indeed, shooting did unfortunately become necessary, for you see, we were not alone upon the moon.
There were creatures.
There were, in fact, many spiders upon the moon. Large spiders.
Some the size of Alsatians.
Some the size of cows. Some the size of a carriage. And we were shocked and appalled. And thus we raised our firearms, ready to fight to the last for the Empire.
However, while also pumping.
Well, yes, you see, we as I said, we had one hand, so we'd be using pistols.
I see.
Yes. So, and thus, as we were about to fire, the spiders spoke, using their mysterious mental powers.
Oh.
Wait, they said, do not shoot. We are but humble spiders of the moon. And then I said to them, I see. And how did this come to be? And they said, originally, we were from Mars. However, the Martians drove us from Mars, and thus we fled, following our thin, pale Duke, to the moon. And
are you telling me that the Martians took the spiders from Mars and put them on the moon and didn't bother going straight to Earth?
No, dear Ansar, you misunderstand. The spiders had been driven from Mars by the Martians. They followed their thin white Duke from Mars, these spiders, to the moon, where they could hide from the Martians.
Some sort of taxi arrangement, then.
Well, apparently they weaved their mighty orbital vessels from silk, for their silk was very strong. For you see, they are giant spiders. And so we said, yes. And so we said to them, spiders.
You be my pumper.
You've got eight arms. You can pump me real good. One of you in the middle of the circle, you can pump us all.
That's exactly what I said.
Hey,
one would almost think I had pumping on the brain.
By the way,
they agreed.
You've gained 3 coins from me so far.
I know, it's wonderful. I did lose one because technically I didn't follow Ansar's thing about the...
But please continue with your pumping spiders.
So, having agreed to do this because they were so relieved to find out that we had defeated the awful Martians and thus freed Mars, and we walked across and were taught their interesting yet uncivilized ways. Mm-hmm. And we found their thin white Duke who did say to us, hello, I am the thin white Duke of the spiders of Mars. Is it true that you have defeated the Martians? And to which I would simply say, why, yes, thin white Duke, we have defeated the Martians. You may, if you wish, take your spiders back to Mars. To which he replied, well, certainly. However, can we thank you? To which I replied, well, we would like to claim the moon in the name of the Empire for Her Majesty Queen Victoria. To which he responded, oh, well, yes, I love a good queen. And also,
<Does he now?
laughs> you wish to set up trade arrangements for your mighty silk.
And which... that's allow me down your pants. Sorry, I couldn't resist any longer.
I know. We can construct our own mighty constructions and vessels and bridges and buildings and gallows and so forth. To which he responded, why, certainly. Thank you very much. Also, would you like to join me in my bedchamber? But we shall say no more on the rents of that evening because there are ladies present.
Indeed.
And so it was that I had successfully claimed the moon for Queen Victoria and returned the spiders to Mars and gained access to their silk, with which we shall build new vehicles and weaponry, with which we will conquer the rest of the world, and also the entire universe in the name of Her Majesty Queen Victoria.
Indeed. Now we come to an impasse. We need to work out who is higher ranking, a valet or a first mate. I'm inclined that the first mate is higher ranking.
I would say so as well.
Yes, I must agree.
Because that's an independent rank as opposed to a gentleman's gentleman.
Well, there we go then.
I guess it depends who your captain is.
Maha.
That is true. Maha indeed.
Well, I guess we both have our own methods of gentle persuasion.
I mean, gentle persuasion, fire to the face, it's all the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've reached the same conclusion on that one then.
So, let me tell you the story of how I escaped from a prison cell, having lost is too strong a word, really, mislaid the ship I was first mate of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ship is, it's quite a nice ship. Paddles.
Slightly haunted.
I mean, there was an issue with hauntings at one point, yes. But, you know, it was a nice little runner. The captain was crazy.
Understatement of the fucking century.
But, you know, I mean, once he got the hang of which way around the map was supposed to be, It was better. We unfortunately had a bit of a run-in with a group of very unfriendly pirates. I mean, we were privateers ourselves, but these pirates, they were nasty people. Nasty. We'd come across them before, and they were very odd.
Odd in what way?
I mean, a couple of them were like to go round in like a pantomime horse costume, which makes, you know, going up rigging and things like that quite difficult. But, you know, they managed it somehow. I mean, seeing extra hands up. Coming up the side of a horse costume is
yes, well,
but yes, so they were pretty odd, but they also liked cutting people. I didn't like that.
No, I can imagine.
So anyway, we were having this confrontation with them, and unfortunately, things were said, and. The captain agreed that he would play a gambling game for the ship.
Oh, no.
Now, as I remember, your captain was an incredibly incapable gambler.
I mean, incapable could be put in front of quite a few descriptives for the captain, unfortunately.
Cook. Navigator.
Captain.
Negotiator.
So, unfortunately, he'd been, when they boarded our ship, he demanded to be taken to see their captain. So he was taken on board their ship. And unfortunately, I wasn't there to, you know, rein in the...
Stop him, basically.
Yes. So he came back with this, aha, I've had this marvellous idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. I'm going to play cards to win our ship back.
Mm-hmm.
Win it back.
So basically, yes, the other pirate captain obviously wanted to take our ship. Mm-hmm. And our captain had persuaded him that we could that he would play cards with him.
I see. So you had effectively lost the ship in a battle, and at that point there was nothing to do but a gambling game to try and reclaim it?
Yes, exactly.
That sounds like a rather unfortunate situation to be in.
I mean, it is, yes. It is one of a fairly long line of unfortunate situations we found ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway... He had had this fantastic idea of playing cards to win the ship back, which, you know, wouldn't have been advisable at all, given his...
Lack of skill.
Lack of any kind of skill, apart from... Well, he had skill in drinking, but very little else, really. So there we were, kind of, all kind of in the... we'd been tied up in the hold, And he was going off play cards. But at this point, luckily or unluckily, depending on your point of view, really, we happened to come across a patrol of the local navy appeared, which was problematic for both of us, really.
Because you're both privateers.
Yes, exactly. So they ended up abandoning their game because basically everyone was taken into custody. So we were all put in this cell. Both the ships were impounded. And we were sat there with the pantomime horse.
The people who like to cook people.
Yes. I seem to remember one of the stokers, I think, on their ship was dressed as a fairy with a little wand.
A fairy stoker.
So there we were in this cell. And
was it quite cramped, all of you in the same cell?
It wasn't pleasant.
Hmm.
We didn't have our weapons, so gentle persuasion was not an option at this point.
That's gentle persuasion, the giant mechanical axe, yes?
That's the one, yes.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, that wasn't with us. But what we did, and I can't remember whose plan it was exactly, but in this cell, there were some old rags, and the brilliant idea involved the pantomime horse and dressing our captain up as a washerwoman.
That does seem to be a thing with you.
Well, I mean, it's a good plan. I can't remember a time that it wouldn't have worked.
Fair.
So was that your captain's other skill, drinking and looking like a washerwoman?
It could be. I never thought of it that way. But it could well be. I'll have to put it to him. Maybe he might like that.
It's quite a skill set.
It is a skill set.
Looking like a washerwoman. Yes, it is quite a skill set.
I mean, I'm not sure the hat quite goes. He does like his hat. So there we are. Everyone's trying to disguise the beard, try and make the captain's hat look less like a captain's hat and more like, well, a washerwoman's head, which is difficult when it has rather a large feather sticking out the side.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, anyway, the two guys who were dressed as the pantomime horse were going to let the washerwoman sit on their back. I'm not quite sure where that came into it, but that was the plan. One of the other privateers had a bit of, you know, they did a bit of like makeup on his face, tried to make him look pretty.
So he looked a lot like a washerwoman, is what you're saying.
Well, that was the idea, yes.
For a man with an absolutely enormous beard, that must have been very difficult.
I mean, I think I have mentioned that it wasn't particularly easy, and it wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, giving him credit, he did manage to, in a very squeaky voice that I'm sure he must have
practiced.
Sure, he must have practiced it before. He did manage to persuade the guard that he was a washerwoman, even though a washerwoman hadn't come into the cell, to let him out with his pantomime horse.
I mean, everyone knows that washerwomen ride pantomime horses, right?
Of course they do. Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, it's better than a burning bush.
Yes.
I mean, let's face it, a washerwoman riding a real horse would be ridiculous.
Yes, as would a washerwoman riding a burning bush, if I'm honest.
Well, both have been used, I seem to remember. Yeah.
I only vaguely remember that.
That's because that was
a considerable number of years ago.
Oriental Adventures.
Oh, blimey. That's even longer ago then.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Anyway, I've lost my train of thought. Yes,
he was
as his washerwoman on his pantomime horse, and the plan was just for him to get out the door. He'd persuaded the guard very nicely, and the plan was just to get the keys, make sure the guard wasn't looking, so everyone else could sneak out, mm-hmm. you know, grab
standard
stuff.
Escape.
Yeah, the escape plan. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, like several plans that he's been involved in, you know, you discuss a plan, you know what the plan is.
The porcupine forgets it 3 seconds in.
3 seconds later, it's like, ooh, there's a pantomime horse.
Now, is this plans he's been involved in or plans he's happened to?
I mean, I'm not sure there's a difference.
I suppose not in his case.
I mean, being involved and happening to... Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. So, for whatever reason, he decided to start chatting up the guard.
Right, as he did.
Who had taken an interest in his pantomime horse.
I see.
Which...
Not his washerwoman, his pantomime horse.
Yes.
Excellent, just so we know where we're standing.
Yes, quite. He was standing quite close to the pantomime horse, in fact.
Yes, you do. Oh, sorry.
So we were all ready to, you know, jump up and grab all our stuff and make our escape. But in the end, what we had to do was basically get the pantomime horse to distract the guard instead.
Distract the guard with yes. quote marks. I see.
It well, was one of those plans.
Well, you know, a kind of an impulse plan is much better than a captain plan.
Yes, yes, I'm gathering from your tone of voice.
But we did successfully do that, and the guard was knocked out by the pantomime horse.
I see.
Who didn't appreciate the advances.
The advances, no.
But we were able to escape. I was able to gently persuade several guards. And they decided to call it quits. And we got our ship back. And the other privateers went on the way.
Excellent.
Hurrah.
Excellent. So, I believe we come to you, Ansar.
Yes. Well... It almost seems that every month would give me a story worthy of this gathering and their Circassarian's tutelage, shall we say.
I just want to make sure you don't have a boring life, Ansar.
There is absolutely no possibility of that at this point, sir. Thank you very much for your concern. but, yes... I think the story about the, well, perhaps it would be better to call it the attempted social gathering of the season, both more and less successful than originally intended.
I see.
But, quite the gala it was supposed to be. Various invitees among the high nobility and the not-so-high nobility and the not-quite-nobility. Circassarian has always been a mover and shaker when it comes to upward nobility. For this particular endeavor, I was seconded to assist the butler in organizing things. Because he was having a problem with staff motivation, you see.
Motivation? Oh, yeah.
Indeed. Funnily,
Lady Elizabeth Liddington would have had a potion for that.
Yes, absolutely.
My recollection of the Lady Liddington was she had a potion for almost anything if you gave her 15 minutes. Funnily enough, the vast majority of motivational issues evaporated more or less upon my arrival. Can't imagine why. But... there were some more testing missions, including the retrieval of a particular vintage from a contact of Circassarian's, which he did not wish to entrust to anyone else.
This contact, was he by any chance a thin white duke on a moon or potentially... Mars?
Ah, no. This was before those particular adventures.
Ah.
So that contact had not yet been made. Indeed, this was the sort of event which got him the visibility that would have had him pushed to be at the head of such an expedition.
Yeah. Oh. It's either went very well or very, very, very poorly indeed.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, a bit of both. Sarkazarian had set his heart on a particular vintage whose name escapes me right now, but he occasionally gets out without me, and had located, or believed he had, such a vintage in the possession of a vintner by the name of Shard. And so I was sent, having received a note on, a few days too late, to be comfortable timing, that the stock is ready, come and collect. So I took a couple of the larger staff, because he wasn't providing for a single dinner. Oh no, he was providing for a whole evening. Which means that me and a couple of the horse beastmen are going to pick up a butt.
A bust?
Of a particular vintage.
Your horse needs a new belt?
Oh, certainly not. Theirs are quite powerful.
You had two horse butts to go and collect your butt.
A big butt.
More or less.
And your butt was full.
Well, the butt we were going to collect was full.
I see.
I made sure we went before we went.
I see. I'll go ahead and lower myself back to two then.
For those wondering at home, a butt is an imperial measure roughly equivalent to 491 litres.
Yes, we may have mentioned that at some point during a peck of ogres.
So we take one of the drays from the stables and we head out to go and manhandle a butt.
Manhandle your butt, yes, of course.
So across London we have to go.
Or in this case, horse handle your butt. And tiger handle your butt.
Yes. I believe there were also some staff at the vintners, so definitely manhandling as well.
I see. That was going to be a well-handled butt.
Oh, yes. It had to get to the end in one piece, after all. Couldn't have it ruined along the way.
Wow. It's terrible if you ruin your butt.
Indeed it is. So we make it to the vintner's import warehouse, because this, ladies and gentlemen, has come from overseas.
It's an overseas butt!
Oh my.
It takes us most of the morning, but that butt gets very thoroughly handled onto the dray and chocked in place for its transit to the manor.
You do have to shove chocks in your butt.
It is sometimes necessary, yes. Now, of course, at this point, beyond the labelling on said butt, I was not privy to the exact nature of this vintage. And as we transported it, well, a certain amount of leakage is expected. I wasn't expecting the rats to follow us and dance.
I see. You had a leaky butt.
Dancing rats?
Yep.
How unfortunate for you.
Well, it did cause a trail of people, which, now that I come to think of it, might have been the best marketing the party ever had. But,
Yes, you mentioned the butt.
Many times.
Yeah. So
your leaky butt attracted all the people to the party.
Well, all of the people not on the invite list, yes.
Is it better than mine? I think you're saying it's better than mine, and that if you had to teach me how to achieve the same level of butt as you, then you'd have to charge me. Correct?
Certainly.
Oh, I thought there was only milk-based beverages.
No, it's diversified quite a lot recently.
It seems to have done. Excellent. It's now butts. Anyway.
So we managed to get it back to the manor.
Mm-hmm.
And the quartermaster was not expecting a butt, despite it being on the paperwork.
The quartermaster was expecting a whole trail of rats. And did they have little cheese boards set up ready for them?
No, they did not. But...
Again, you mentioned them before.
I should probably refrain from using that term.
Yes.
However, the rats, after a stout hammering of the bung, did leave us alone.
You hammered the bung in your butt very hard, yes?
Yes, the leakage stopped after that.
I see. Mm. It's amazing how your foot will stop once you hammer a bung into it very hard.
It does seem to be that way. A significant portion of the mid to late morning was spent moving things around so that the butt could be placed, in fact, inside the manor.
You had difficulty getting your butt through the door.
Yep. This doesn't get any better, folks.
What's your goodness doing?
Yes. Please continue quickly. Quickly. I'm drowning.
Oh, ow, ow, ow. Anyway, we managed to emplace the container and preparations begin for dinner. There's a lot of slow roasted meats. There's a lot of carefully cooked vegetables and fruits of various descriptions, some of which are horribly toxic if you get it wrong. But mostly, the theme of the evening seemed to be hallucinogenic.
So you had psychedelic meat and tea veg for your butt.
As well as what was inside it, dear sir.
Ah, yes, let us not forget what is already inside your butt.
And shall we say, pusu some accounting errors, rather too much food.
Uh-huh.
But that was quickly solved by the fact that there was a, shall we say, keyed up crowd outside on account of the whole leakage and dancing rats problem. So, although there was rather too much for the invited guests, it went away very quickly.
I see.
So you let them feast.
I had the staff put up a set of trestle tables outside.
Hardwick has failed to say that you let them feast on your butt.
Well, by that point it had been delivered, so it would have been Sir Kazarian's butt.
Ah, yes. You offered Sir Kazarian's butt.
On a trestle
feast.
Table.
On a trestle table, no less. Please continue.
Can you define it for my butts?
I have heard that your butt is very much public property now.
So, originally invited guest count, 50. Actual partakers, 500. And depending on how they took the various fruits and veggies, best or worst night of their lives.
Yes, I can imagine.
So that, ladies and gentlemen, is, well, the sanitized version of the story of the best and worst gala ever put on by Sir Kazarian Weatherby.
Indeed. I believe we've reached the point where we need to proffer our coins to the people we thought told the best story. As the king, I will proffer my single one, just one only, coin to Ansar for his tale of a magnificent butt. I believe you went second.
Right. I will give my four remaining coins to Sir Kazarian Weatherby for a delightful tale of a trip to the moon.
Okay. Lady Bubbles.
I will also give my six remaining coins to the story about going to the moon.
You are currently on 10, Sir Kazarian Weatherby.
I give my six. I have to give mine to Ansar.
Mm-hmm. Ansar is upon 7, and you are upon 10. Ansar?
I think I have 5.
I think so.
And I am giving them to Hardwick for a well-told tale of suggestive horse.
Suggestive horseplay, yes. So finally, Hardwick.
I am giving my 3 to Sir Kazarian Weatherby.
Ah, so Sir Kazarian is the winner with a full 13 coins to his name.
13?
13! 13! Anyway.
You lot are weird.
Yeah. There's been
You're
a
only just
jokes.
Working this out?
No, I just felt like that was a really apt moment to remind you all.
Yeah, we're well over. Anyway, We hope you've enjoyed at least some of what you've been listening to. If you have, please do feel free to leave us your iTunes reviews, your Podchaser reviews, your Podbeam reviews. You can talk to us at thecultoftandice.net, thecultoftandice@gmail.com, on the Twitters @cultoftandice. You can talk to me @Mordring, and you can talk to her @TGramming. Thank you for listening, and goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.